Welcome back to this week's episode of Toys on Tap. This week we bring on someone from the past 2 years have gone by, Luke Chu. We love to hear from him and all the stuff he's got going on, but this episode's a little different. We kind of just get to rant together and talk through nonsense. If you want more Toys on Tap, you can follow on all socials at Toys on Tap. If you want to jump on and support the show in a free way, you can like, rate, review, subscribe wherever you get podcasts. And if you want to support even more, you can jump on that Patreon at patreon.com/toysontap. That's where you get all the nitty gritty and the good stuff. Now let's get to this week's episode of Toys on Tap.
Here I am.
You made it.
I made it.
It's...
Let me turn up the volume a little bit so I can hear you better. I'm so sorry about the mix-up, by the way.
No, don't. I mean, what is it, 7 minutes? I got time.
All right, yeah. Let me see if I could fuck with this a little bit. All right. All right.
You look beautiful. Don't even. You look great.
My vanity is getting the best of me. You know, it's funny because, like, I completely lost track of time, and then, like, I was planning on recording this in the studio, and then I, hold on. How do I? Can I move this screen? Your window? Nope, I can't. It's funny because, like, the camera is right here, but your window is in the opposite direction. So, like, if I want to, like, look like I'm talking directly to you,
yep,
I can't. But anyways, yeah. So, but the problem is my studio has such shitty fucking internet that it's like, you know, there's a compromise in terms of like. You know, like, I don't know, speed and clarity, but then I don't have my actual mic. I don't actually have my laptop. I don't actually have my, like, camera. I'm using, you know, a tablet camera.
Yeah. So, hey, well, you look great on this one, so you're fine. It's wild. I looked back. Your episode, the last time we did this, came out in April of 22.
Damn. It felt like it was just last year.
Yeah. And it is, it's a shame, right? So I had to come back and get you on. I've seen you at designer cons since then. And there's so much life that has come from between then and now. And so I absolutely want to talk about all of that and just get an update on life and work and the gallery show that happened and all that stuff.
All right, let's get into it.
I feel like that's what this is about. But just like every episode, before we start, you have to introduce yourself. Yes, tell us who you are, what you do.
Hello, my name is Luke Chu. I am a Los Angeles-based painter, designer, and toy designer. And I've been doing this now for... wow, way over 20 years. So, but yeah, please follow me at Luke Chu. It's LukeCheueh.
Oh, we kind of walked through all of your art stuff. We walked through the process of you finding the bears. We walked through some drug stuff. Walked through the beginnings of the paintings and the beginnings of really, like, living it out, what it looked like to be an artist in LA. We kind of walked through all of that. So let's take it back to, like, 2022.
Sure. It has been, you know, an interesting year. Like, since 2022, I released my low fidelity figure.
Yeah.
I released that in 2023, and that's my first, like, self-produced figure. And that has been an interesting, production. And I I'm still kind of figuring it out, and I'm really bad at like promotion and, you know, all that other stuff. Since then, in 2022, I had, I don't remember what I think I did a show in Australia and England, at Fine Art Gallery and, Dorothy Circus Gallery. And then in 2023, I did a Corey Helford show. And then in 2024, I did another Vine Art and Dorothy Circus show. And it was interesting because, people have been saying that we are kind of going through a bit of an art recession. Mm-hmm. And I definitely felt it. Yeah. You know, I don't think my ideas have changed that dramatically. I don't think my style has changed much at all, but you know, art sales are pretty slow. Toy sales are slower than, you know, what I expected, and I think that a lot of people are kind of experiencing that right now. And I mean, like, I still, like, you know, am growing, I think, as a brand and as an artist, but I believe that, you know, the uncertainty of the economic uncertainty of the world has finally caught up, you know, to with a lot of people, including myself.
So. I've heard it said that, like, I mean, in the way that you're describing it, kind of is a little different, but I've heard it described as COVID comes in 2020, everyone gets Trump bucks or whatever, and they're just throwing money at everything.
Right.
And then following that in like 2022, the market starts to kind of balance back out to what it was. So mm-hmm. You see it in 2024, are we still balancing out, or is it just dropping off?
I don't know, you know, like, if I really knew, I'd be an economist. And, yeah. I mean, I want to believe that we're going to balance out. But, you know, considering the kind of economic rhetoric I've been hearing, from the incoming administration, I'm like kind of nervous about it, especially when it comes to like tariffs in China, where I have most of my stuff manufactured. That's going to gravely affect, you know, my bottom line and my retail prices. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there isn't a company in the United States that can be able to manufacture what I want at the quality that I want and at the cost that, you know, works for me. You know, like, I try my best to, you know, provide a product at a fair price. And, you know, like, I'm not sure if it, you know, how it's going to work out. I don't even know whether or not it's going to be worth, you know, taking on another production until, like, what is it, 2029? You know, if, you know, if everything, all the rhetoric that has been, you know, like, spewed comes to fruition.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, we're getting a little political here, and obviously, and I think you could tell by the tone of my voice, you know, where my alliances, you know, lay, but like, yeah. The thing, and look, I would love for, you know, everything that normal Americans want to happen economically happens. You know, I would love for, you know, for everyone who voted for Trump, you know, like, with all these, you know, economic promises, I would love for those things to happen. But I, from, you know, what I've, you know, seen and heard.
Cozinha! It looks like Godzilla, but due to international copyright laws, it's not.
Still, we should run like it is Godzilla!
Though it isn't.
The newest kaiju is about to stomp its way onto the scene.
What's that smell?
Meet Barfy. The sludge-spewing kaiju inspired by the lizard we all know and love. Coming from the brain of Bootleg Toy Co. and brought to life by Toys on Tap. This monstrosity will come in at a massive 6 inches in 3 styles. 1 blank white and 2 colorways exclusive to Toys on Tap. The first colorway is Barfy's natural colors. And the second is... That's right, Reptar colorway.
Now that's entertainment!
This monstrosity will arrive in a clear box with a backer that doubles as a backdrop for your figure. Barfy arrives on the scene soon. You don't want to miss this, but remember, stay out of the way of the sludge.
Like, it doesn't look like it's going to play out as simple, as easily as, you know, and it's going to affect little people like myself, yeah. You know, and so, you know. We'll see. We shall see. It's interesting. The, you know, like for the past, like in 2017, I went to a toy con convention in, Shanghai. It was the Shanghai Toy Show. And it was the first time I was exposed to this, you know, company and their insane ambitions called Pop Mart. Mm-hmm. And like there was, you know, it was a huge convention. There was tons of people out there. People were buying stuff up all over the place, but I didn't really think much of it. And then I went to, I think it was 2022 or 23. I went to Singapore, where I went to the Singapore toy show, where that was put on by Pop Mart. And I could see like all these like, you know, rabid, and I mean rabid, like they were like fighting each other in the aisles, you know, like Asian collectors buying up all this Pop Mart stuff. And I was like, oh, I'm glad it, you know, hasn't hit, you know, America yet.
Yeah.
And then in just this past November, you know, Designer Con.
Yeah.
I'm walking down the aisles. You know, I see a bunch, I see Pop Mart cosplay, and I'm like, what the fuck has happened? It's finally happening. You know, like, you know, the wave of influence is finally crashing onto our shores. And I am both impressed and dismayed.
Yeah.
By it. I'm impressed because of the strategy. I'm impressed by, you know, I was introduced to all this in 2017.
Yeah.
And like now it's, you know, 2025. This is 8 years of a build, you know, to finally like, you know, hit, you know, America. And like now I open up TikTok and there's fucking videos of, you know, talking about like Pop Mart, you know, and how, you know, they kind of just seem to come up out of nowhere. And I'm a little dismayed because I think a lot of the products that they have are trash. I mean, I'm kidding. I think some of their things are pretty freaking cool. Like the tightness of the production is very impressive. Mm-hmm. You know, the fact that you're getting these intricate miniature sculpts in blind boxes, you know, that are well executed and just, I don't know, tight paint, like the paint is tight. Like you go to like freaking Disney and you look at the fucking, you go to downtown Disney in Orange County, and you go to any of the Disney toy stores, and you look at the crap that they have on their fucking, you know, shelves, and like, you know, things will be off, like the paint will be off by a fraction of a millimeter, but that's still enough of a, you know, of a mistake to, like, you know, make it look like fucking garbage.
Yeah.
And but then you go to Pop Mart and everything is like slick and like tight, and it's, yeah, there's glossy parts and there's matte parts, and it's just, and it's, you know, like, what the fuck, Disney? Like, you're the fucking House of Mouse, and yeah, you can't fucking, like, you know, like, get your factories in order. Like, you know, like, you know, put a little more effort into, like, you know, like, creating. I'm sorry, I'm just ranting right now.
No, I love it. I love it. This is what I've waited for 2 years.
But this is like, are you familiar with the subreddit Chinesium?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So Chinesium, for those of you who don't know, is a tongue-in-cheek word used to describe cheap Chinese products,
which we all use every day.
Which we use every fucking day, you know. And like, you get a hammer, you fucking hit a nail, and the hammer breaks off. The head of the hammer breaks off of the handle. Yeah. It's made out of Chinesium, you know. But the thing is that, like, what people don't realize in the United States is that these products are made to specifications by American companies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you know, granted, there is some fucking crap coming out of fucking China, like, you know, but the thing is that, like, it's the American companies that are trying to cut corners any way they can in order to make an extra buck, that are fucking are producing, you know, just fucking shit products for the American, for Americans. We love our disposable fucking, you know, culture, and, you know, China is happy to sell it to us, you know, on the cheap. You know, because, you know, like, you know, what do the Chinese people, what do the Chinese care? Like, it's, you know, it's fucking America. Meanwhile, like, in China, you, like, they have their own fucking crazy set of insane problems with, you know, money and production. But, like, look at the fucking electric cars that are coming out of there. And I'm just kind of, I just have to go, like, well, fuck, you know, like, you know, what are we going to fucking do? We're America, you know, like, is, you know, so caught up in this conservative liberal, like, tug of war that, like, you know, we're like failing to fucking look at to solve any real problems.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, anyways.
Hey, that this is the political hour with Luke Chu.
The left and the right are both fucked.
Yeah,
that's what I have to say. And, like, I consider myself a leftist.
Yeah.
And I'll say the left is just as fucked as the right.
I will tell you that I saw the first Trump video ever today, a clip, and it made me happy. Only in he was spewing something about, I want to get Canada as the 51st state. And so the thing that made me happy about it was, the longer he focuses on stupid stuff like that, or renaming the Gulf of Mexico the Gulf of America, I don't care. Focus on that stuff, the less people get hurt. Right. Like, focus on the stupidity. I don't care.
That's the problem, though. The problem with that is that with his fucking, the way he's fucking spouting, he's literally diverting attention and time and resources to fucking, like, stupid fucking issues. What? Meanwhile, the people that the boots on the ground are fucking, like, going out and fucking, like, conducting, you know, MAGA fucking, you know, like, activities.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, and, you know, the 24 news hours news cycle is, you know, an annoying fucking news cycle. But the thing is that, like, you know, when everyone is looking at the fucking squirrel because Trump screams squirrel, you know, meanwhile, all the little fucking, you know, fascistic assholes are out there are fucking, like, you know, assaulting fucking, you know, like, minorities or whatever and fucking like taking our fucking healthcare away. Like, you know, what the fuck are, you know, I Trump was the most entertaining thing that happened to the American political news cycle. And for some people like myself, I just can't help but laugh and be like, my nihilism just goes into overdrive, but for others, like my girlfriend, her like anxiety fucking like, you know, skyrockets. So it's, you know, like, I don't know, fucking it. I don't want to alienate, you know, anyone, because like from the left or the right, because I believe that there are, you know, great fucking, that everyone has, is entitled to an opinion, and everyone, the biggest problems in our country are not things that can just be solved one-sidedly. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that, you know, like, you know, and you know, well, I at the end of the day, we're all just fucking like, you know, human beings just like trying to figure out how the fuck this all fucking works out for us, you know. And you know, some people make mistakes. I make mistakes all the time. I fucking do paintings about how many mistakes I make throughout my life. I don't know shit. And, you know, like, it's, anyways, I don't know. I mean,
we'll pivot. How about this? We'll pivot.
Yeah, let's go somewhere. Tell me, what do you think of the Pop Mart thing?
Empire Blister. Empire Blisters. Specializing in action figure blisters. 2.75-inch or 1/18 scale. 19 different styles. Two sizes of clamshell figure cases. Four different bulk pack options. Quantities of 100 sample packs available. Empire Blisters. Now sponsors Toys on Tap. That means a 10% off coupon on checkout. Use code Toys on Tap 10. That's TOYSONTAP 10. Empire Blisters.
There's a part of me that always at the lowest, like, I just like when things are created, right? Like artistic endeavor to create whatever you're going to create. If it's a company, if it's a person, like, I want to see what you've got. So I don't know that it's something I would collect. Like, I don't think that's anything that I want, but also like I collect weird stuff. So right. I'm not that person.
But I feel that like the direction that Pop Mart is going goes is like very much geared toward like the super cute.
Yeah.
And that's fine, you know, but I also kind of feel like Americans like a good healthy scoop of snark with their cuteness.
Yeah, you know? I don't know that we will ever as a collective populace move towards like solely towards kawaii or solely towards like some other cuteness level. Like, I don't think that's in it for us. I do think that we,
I mean, there are individuals within us that like will like,
yeah,
dedicate themselves to a very particular like look, genre, aesthetic.
Yeah.
But as a whole, we are a wishy-washy bunch. Yeah.
It's crazy to me to think that, I mean, I look, so all the toys behind me, I look at all the production pieces that have come from artists, and I look at the things that, like, where the toy scene is in general, and I talk to artists when I'm at DesignerCon and all those things, and I don't see another artist that even functions the same way, in the same style, in the same, so I don't know what it looks like for Pop Mart to like continue growing. Does it beat out all the other artists unless we all like pivot towards that? Does it like take up most of the resources so that people don't want, like, I don't know what that looks like in the future.
I think if they want to infiltrate the American market, they're going to need big name American artists and Like, so people like, say, Tristan Eaton, or I was kind of think that, like, I was going to say Ron English, but I think Ron English's, like, sardonic, like, message is a little too much for Pop Mart's, you know, aesthetic. Like, you know, like, what, you know, like, you can't,
you know, what he believes. Yeah.
yeah. You know, and so I kind of, you know, I think that, like, you know, they're going to need American artists, because you could only sell so many Labubus before, you know, it's like, you know, Americans kind of get over it. And, you know, granted, Lisa from Blackpink loves Labubu, but, like, you know, I don't know.
The attention span of collectors here, I've noticed, is so short. In the resin scene, there's people that will collect everything of certain artists, which, that's awesome. Like, you are nailing it for that artist.
You brought up something that I'm curious about from you too. And that is, so I did 5 points.
Yeah.
Festival. And, you know, it was cool. It was cute. It was fun. Slip that one in there.
Yeah, it was cute. It was cute. Yeah.
It was cute. And, but, like, you know, I was really kind of surprised by the resin scene. Mm. Like, you know, because, you know, like, you know, when I started, and even, like, you know, like, let's go back into the 90s with, like, the Michael Laos and, like, that entire Hong Kong, like, art toy scene, like, the material that everyone wanted was vinyl.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, you know, in the, like, 2010s, I'd say, Sifubi became the thing.
Yeah.
And, like, everyone was scrambling to fucking do, like, you know, hand-poured vinyl and, you know, soft vinyl and whatever. And there was this, like, entire fucking conflict. Oh, if it doesn't come from Japan, it's not Sifubi. Oh, but the Japanese artists are all going to fucking China because they don't want to fucking, like, you know, you know, wait on, they can't deal with the fucking wait in the factories. Oh, and whatever. And there was that entire fucking thing. And then suddenly it shifted to resin. Mm. And I was, and, okay, there was a moment when I was at that 2017 show in Shanghai,
mm-hmm.
where there was a guy I knew. I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but he had this amazing, like, dragon sculpture. It's huge, like, easily, like, you know, worth, like, thousands of dollars because of its size and its complexity. And it was, like, some relatively popular artist too. And, you know, a collector came up, granted, this is a Chinese collector, came up to his booth and was like, I love this. How much is it? And, you know, spits out, like, you know, some big number, and, you know, pulls out his wallet. And then he asks what the material is. And it's resin. He closes his wallet, puts it back, and walks away.
Mm.
And I kind of felt like, well, yeah, that kind of, like, you know, like, makes sense because of just the materials trend, the trend in materials, right?
Yeah.
Everyone's really interested in vinyl. But, you know, to see all this resin, and, like, I've got, like, resin prototypes and resin mm-hmm. sculpts, and I've got, like, you know, like, stuff that I've had for years now. And, like, I look at all these double casts, right? Like, the clear within, and they're beautiful, but holy shit, they do not age well.
Do they not? Do they, like, yellow or whatever?
They yellow. They fucking yellow. And, like, that part of that is probably because of the fact that, you know, it's amateur like casting, mm-hmm. people are, or it's cheaply casted, and, you know, people are just not as familiar with the materials, but I don't know, or it's not sealed, or I don't know what it is, but like to see people camping out at Five Points and waiting in line, and this line that like went down the entire hall that I was in, you know, for an artist who was doing beautiful castings, resin casts. Work really wasn't my thing, you know, but like, you know, I'm, you know, old. And, you know, like to see that, I was just kind of like surprised and dumbfounded. And I'm curious what you think about this, and why do you think there was this jump to, I mean, I can tell you, I can honestly say one of the main reasons why people have gone to resin is probably because it costs too much money to fucking do vinyl. Mm-hmm. It simply costs too much fucking money.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like my low fidelity figure, you know, like I spent, you know, tens of thousands of dollars to fucking produce, you know, and I assure you it wasn't hovering in the tens section. It was, I just don't want to fucking,
you know,
talking about like, you know,
I'm going to like AI voice and say some other number.
No, it's okay. You don't have to do that, but like it's, I spent a lot of fucking money to have it made. And then like, there's all this shit, like fucking having that like shit, like fucking shipped to you. It takes a month to fucking get it over to you. And then like, you know, you have to like, you know, store most of it because, you know, you're making fucking like you're at the bottom, you're fucking making hundreds of pieces at a time.
Yeah.
And like it's a huge gamble. A huge fucking gamble.
Yeah.
To produce these things. That's the reason why like I'm okay with like when I worked with companies like Monkey King, it's like, you know, my take home for these productions was minuscule. But the thing is, I didn't fucking put a penny,
right?
You know, in production,
and
they're taking the gamble. They made the gamble. You know, what do I get in return? They should make the money, but like, and what do I get in return? I have a figure that is mine, that is building my name and my brand, and you know, people. And if it's successful, then like, you know, that just like pays off in its own way for me.
Yeah.
You know? So,
yeah. I mean,
anyways,
crazy to me. So I've started this process of like paying for people to get their stuff made at a lower level. So I'm not like one of these huge companies, but, the way that I'm set up, I'm able to afford to do that. And so I'm taking on the risk to bring people's things up to life. And I fully understand the risk. And it's been fun. It's been such a fun, we made a little Sifubi shark, and then I have the next one coming out. His name's Barfies, like a kaiju lizard popping out of a barrel, puking sludge. And
awesome.
I'm all about those things. So I love that. Resin is such an interesting dynamic, and I get why people go like, it's one, I think that molding and casting, though I love what people do. I love the Dingy Dave does the best double and triple cast I've ever seen in my life. Just like the little astronauts, and they're so good. Mm-hmm. But we're edging upon a point where 3D resin printers are more efficient, more effective, can get what you need, not just as prototypes, but people are now using them to make like insane pieces. Uh-huh. And it's really difficult now to even at this point say like, I could go that route. I could get a 3D resin printer, get the settings nailed down, do that. or I could spend a lot of money on a two-port mold thing, which I probably will mess up and have messed up a lot. I could probably get the resin, the two-part resins, and really mess up my work table. Like there's so much. I don't know why people go to resin. I did resin and I liked it. And there's a part of it that you love. There's a part that you hate, give and take.
Cancer.
Yeah. Right. Like that's so scary. But what the progression I see now, and I don't know why this is a progression. It seems like when you talk to some people, and I could be wrong, maybe it's just the people I've talked to, it's we do resin, now we're moving to Sifubi as if it's like the next step. Like, oh, now we – and I don't know if it is or if it's just we want to try something new. Whatever it is, I like it. I like seeing great stuff being produced. I collect it. I'm here for it. I don't know why that's the progression though.
It makes sense in that regards, right? Because what you're doing is you're testing the you test the market with resin, right? When your overhead is hundreds of dollars versus, you know, thousands of dollars, just making the molds for a Sifubi, I mean, like, you know, you're paying out the nose. No, for that. And then like
with no recoup cost for months.
None. Yeah. None. You experiment with freaking resin, yeah, and then you move up to to Sifubi, and then you move up even further to large Chinese productions. Because Sifubi, at least you could be able to produce like 20, mm-hmm, 100, whatever. It's, if you're only doing 20, you better be charging a stupid amount of money, for that in order to recoup your fucking, your costs.
Yeah.
But to go to a Chinese factory, hold on, it's a little chilly in here. To work with the Chinese factory is just, I have never, I've never like dealt with pallets of stuff before.
Mm-hmm. Did you get them shipped here in pallets?
In pallets.
Holy hell.
Yeah. Like I had a fucking, I live in a little cul-de-sac of apartments in Los Angeles and I had a full fucking truck fucking come out down my road, down the road. I had no idea. I think he had to back out of my cul-de-sac to get out of there. Mm-hmm. And freaking all the costs to like have something shipped, to make it through customs, enter the port, unload from the port, mm-hmm, have it driven to me. Like, it was insane. The amount of like things I had to sign and all the fucking the money that fucking went that goes into that. Like you're literally spending thousands just to have that shit delivered to you.
Yeah.
And it makes you think twice. When you are going to fucking do that, you gotta
We interrupt this broadcast of Toys on Tap to bring you this.
Meanwhile, in a galaxy of bootleg treasures.
DOV2, we have engine failure. We must crash land on DKE Toy Planet.
Oh my, we're doomed.
Wait, salvation. Hooray, we're saved, DOV2. Limited edition custom artist made action figures and DKE toys.
Check out www.dketoys.com for a full catalog.
Hooray for custom action figures.
DKE.
Really believe in your gamble. Like, really.
You do. I think what's interesting. So I'm working with a Chinese factory right now to do the soft vinyl, the new one. Yeah. And you said something about runs, like, oh, even these massive runs that we do are small runs. I learned that for regular action figures that are packaged, 900 of one is still a small run. which is stupid. That is stupid.
They're doing injection. They're doing injection molding,
right?
And there and like so. When you're doing injection molding, you gotta like you know like those molds are really expensive.
Yeah,
like really expensive.
And so for this new one, it's like I think I'm doing. I think it's like 90, maybe 100 that I'm having produced, mm-hmm. and. In my head, sweating the whole time. I get anxiety about money in general. And 100, just so we're clear, 100 for anyone is a lot of pieces to move.
It is.
But it is. I've seen it done before. I did it with the first figure. So I know that this can happen. I believe in this. But it doesn't stop the sweat that I feel every day. Because that money's gone. It's all gone.
It's gone. Yeah. And you have to believe in the product.
Yeah.
You have to believe that there's going to be a demand for that thing. And it is like, and then like, you know, when our country is fucking like on the cusp of a fucking economic, whatever, I don't know, disaster, like it. That's all I can say. Like, I'm just, you have to fucking like be really careful about like how you know because I don't have you know FU money you know
yeah like,
you know I can't just throw tens of thousands of dollars you know at a thing just for shits and giggles
yeah
you know and I mean I don't know it's toy production is interesting for young new artists, I always recommend, you know, resin casting. If you have a friend who does the resin casting, hire them.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to fuck with that shit. You don't want to fuck with it. Like it smells like it's going to kill you for a reason. And it's probably because it's going to kill you.
Yeah. I do. What's crazy. So we've talked about on different episodes, I've talked about resin casting and my brain, due to ADHD or past drug use or whatever, it is like if you do something, you should do a deep dive on when like the first things were made or like you just deep dive this. And one of the pieces that has come up in resin casting is the earliest one I can find that was like someone's producing it and selling massive quantities is 89. It's the earliest one I can find that I actually have one. And so it's crazy to think that piece that someone was breathing in fumes, hot fumes, like resin's gotten better.
Yeah.
Like then they're breathing in hot fumes and just going for it for not just a small run. They ended up making like 2,200 of these figures and they huffed it. They had to have huffed resin.
what's this figure?
It's called Walt Sickle. It's from Steven Hillenburg and Bert Payne.
Wow.
Yeah, the first run.
That clear is looking great.
Yeah, well, it hasn't yellowed, which thank God. The first run was 1,000. And they sold them. The second run was 600. And then the third run was 600. And they just crushed it.
This was made in 89?
Yeah. This isn't the early. This is the third gen one, right. But they have the earliest one was in 1989.
Holy shit!
And they just they're crushing it. It's hard to find them. They did it without the internet, so that's what I come back to. If they can do that without the internet before they had a name in anything, I can sell 100 toys with the internet.
Sure,
I've got to be able to.
Yeah, but the problem with the internet is the amount of noise on the internet, and it's hard. It's hard to like you know the algorithm's is a pain in the ass, right? Yeah. But the it's not just the algorithm; it's the fact that like you know there's millions, if not billions, of people all screaming. into the cloud, and you know, trying to like get people's attention. And, you know, like it's, yeah, it's both, it's more, it's easier because now you have a platform that you can be able to promote, you know, your thing on, whereas before it was word of mouth, literally. Mm-hmm. And it was like magazine articles or newspaper clips and like freaking used car rags and whatever. But like now it's just harder because there are no captive audiences.
Right.
You know, and you have to like, you know, then the other thing is like, you know, you need to attack from several different angles. So like this production piece that you have, it's another artist that you are collaborating with, right?
Yeah, they designed it and I saw potential. So I was like, I'll bring it to life. Let's do it.
Do they have, they need to push it on their end as well.
Right, right.
Yeah, and a lot of artists drop the ball.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's interesting. I was talking to my studio mate, Lauren YS, and they're a hugely like famous muralist and painter and crazy talented. And we were talking about like using social media.
Mm-hmm.
And I am usually apprehensive of reposting posts that I did.
Mm-hmm.
And Lauren said, like, you know, fuck it. You know, it's fucking free. Just, you know, like, you know, who gives a fuck, you know, like what your, like, you know, your page looks like. You just repost it. Like, it's not like everyone who follows you sees it the first time around, you know? So like, you know, it's a free platform. Fucking milk the shit out of it in order to like, you know, make it work for you. Don't like get caught up with fucking like things like oh, I already posted it a week ago.
Yeah.
I haven't like, you know, quite embraced that yet because I'm, you know, weird like that. But because like, you know, I see it sometimes on like on some of my social media where it's like an artist will post a painting and I'll click like, you know, and then I will like the next day I'll open up, you know, Instagram again and I'll see the painting again, but I'm not liking it for some reason. And I'm like, well, that's annoying. And I'll just keep like, I don't know what the fuck, why I thought I liked this.
Yeah.
You know, and it, but like, you know, it makes sense. You know, you gotta like get eyes on your shit. You know, do you actually look, let me ask you a question. Do you look at Instagram stories?
Ooh. Sometimes it's not a daily thing. Like, I think especially with the podcast, we all use Instagram to get to people. Like, and I think the hard part is the podcast and like, I follow artists and the artists follow the other artists and we all are in this like microcosm of just following each other. So when we post stories, it's just to get more out there, but it's just us seeing it. So I look at them sometimes.
The only time I think stories are fucking, I would use stories
don't say desperate. Don't say I no, use them constantly, but I rarely look at them.
No, the only reason why I would look at someone's story is if I was, oh God, what is it when you're being creepy?
A stalker? Like any
word? Yeah, if I was stalking someone. And I'd be really apprehensive of it because, like, you know, it shows who's looking at your stories.
Yeah.
You know, but, like, I've been trying to get better at looking at them,
mm-hmm.
you know, just because, like, you know, I will see like, oh, like there's hundreds of people like looking at like this dumb story I posted or this fucking repost
yeah.
that I posted. So maybe I should like, you know, look at more Instagram stories. And it's just like, there's so many like ads in there.
Yeah.
And I'm like, ugh, fucking ads. And then like you run into that asshole that fucking like puts like 400, like 40 stories, you know, and he's just like, all right. It's like that is swipe.
Yeah.
It's like, I'll go through. And then I'll just swipe because it's like, you know what? You lost me. You lost me with all your daily affirmation posts.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about.
I know what I'm talking about. Oh yeah. I think Instagram, we're kind of going through a thing where I want to move away from Instagram. Not to like another social media, but I keep telling artists, because we're using this app or this place called District right now. Mm. And we've been talking about it because I'm frustrated with artists that get mad at Instagram. Mm. Like you're mad at it for not being what you want it to be, but it's doing what it was supposed to do.
Right.
Like this is not the place you're going to find your biggest community or biggest supporters. Maybe, but most likely not.
You know, you have no idea how many people are looking at your image, first of all, which is kind of a pain in the ass. And second of all, like, you know, I've come to realize that the number of followers you have doesn't fucking really mean shit.
Unless you can convert all of them, it is zero meaning.
Yeah. And I would have no problem paying Instagram to promote my things. But the one thing I hate more than anything when it comes to my FYP is the little sponsored.
it's like
I'll pay like five more extra dollars,
take that off there. Yeah.
if you can take that sponsored fucking like thing off of my fucking my post, because it just makes me like
feels dirty that you gave money to the beast.
exactly. Yeah. Like, and but you know, like that's the only reason. Meta, if you're listening to this,
we know that you are.
Yeah, and we know you are. This is my issue with, you know, pay for views posts. And you know, if you want me to like throw $5 at your $5-$10 at a post so I could get an extra 1,000 eyes on it. Okay. I'll pay the fucking, you know, the $10. You know, I only post like once every like week. So it's like, you know, it's not that big, not that big of an expense. But the thing is that, you know, but as long as you take off that sponsored thing,
yeah,
we're golden.
tell me about this, most recent, gallery show. I mean, we've talked about all kinds of stuff, but I want to hear about this show and the stuff you worked on, and like if there was a theme for it, how it got started, how long it took you to prepare, like all kinds of good stuff.
What up, toy nerds? This is Ray.
And Dave. Go check out our brand new YouTube channel, The Toy Rats.
We make toys.
We talk about toys.
We talk about old toys.
And new toys.
And toys that we make.
And we're just a bunch of goofballs. It's a good time.
We make fun of Dave a lot.
I'm all right with that. So, if you get a chance, go check out Toy Rats on YouTube. You won't be disappointed. You might be.
Yeah, you could. Who knows?
You got to check it out.
Toy Rats. YouTube.
Bye.
Bye.
So I had two shows last year. I had a show in May at Dorothy Circus in London, and then I had a show at Bine Art in Melbourne, Australia. I made it out to the London show, but I just couldn't, you know, like fork up the cash to fly up to Australia.
Yeah, that's and a huge expense.
Yes, it is. It's you're looking at like $2,500 round trip in coach, and like flying for 17 hours, you know, in coach is just not my idea of a great time.
Right.
But the thing is, and I'm not a business class person. I'm totally a
first class only.
No. I'm a premium economy guy.
Leg room.
Yeah, a little leg room, a bigger screen, a little slightly better like food presentation or whatever. You know, just a little extra. You know, to make me feel like, you know, like good about myself, about the direction the direction of my life. But you know, the shows, I'm you know, like, I don't really adhere to any strict themes anymore. I feel it's difficult, and I admire artists like who do that, like Mark Rydin. Mm-hmm. Mark Rydin is a great example of artists who create shows around themes, like from the early 2000s with his Blood show, to the Tree show, to the Snowyak show, to the Gay 90s show. Like, he like builds entire shows around color palettes and themes, and I am just not that guy.
Yeah.
Like, I just wanna, like, I'm gonna paint whatever the fuck I wanna paint, and you know, it changes from painting to painting to painting. I do find myself kind of being inspired by the location I'm showing at. So I did a series of paintings inspired by English culture when I did the show in London. And like, so I did a painting of one of my favorite like culinary contributions from England, which is the full English breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
Like, English breakfast is the best. It is a high protein, low sugar, freaking, you know, smorgasbord of like eggs and pork. And
I'm here for it.
I'm all for it. And so I did a painting inspired by that. And then the polar opposite of that is the English or the UK's Chinese food culture, which, you know, I became aware of it through social media. And, you know, the English like to say, we're going to have a Chinese. And it's just kind of weird, really weird wording. But like, it's just literally a pile of chips, AKA fries, you know, and deep fried chicken bits or chicken balls, as they call it, and curry sauce and sweet and sour sauce. And it is, there's no vegetables. It's a horrendous mess. And I did a painting inspired by that. And, you know, like, I did another painting inspired by, like, you know, how hoity-toity the English are and, you know, shit, like, you know, whatever. So I find inspiration in, like, you know, my dumb American take on other people, other cultures other than my own.
Yeah.
So like, and for Australia, I did a bunch of paintings that were inspired by Australia. Like, I have this painting called That's a Knife, and it's got like, you know, a gigantic Bowie knife, you know, plunged through the back of my bear. And it's inspired by that scene in Crocodile Dundee, you know, where, you know, that's not a knife, you know, thing. Or what else did I did a painting of a great white shark, you know, swallowing my bear, you know. And, you know, when I think of great white sharks, I think of Australia. So, but, you know, it was interesting. It was kind of eye-opening. Sales were okay. Like, I don't know whether or not it's because it was these countries and they're still kind of dealing with their own economic recoveries from the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
Or if it's because I just haven't like reached out far enough to these places to really have an impact.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe I was a little too ambitious with the large works, and I should have toned it down and just stuck with smaller, more affordable pieces. I don't know. We'll see. I don't have any shows planned outside. Well, I've got some group shows that I'm doing, but like, you know, like I've got a group show and like them participating in February in Korea. And then I've got a solo show in New York at Harmon Projects in, I think, July.
Okay.
And that show will probably be less narrative driven and more kind of like, you know, experiments in like color theory and like, you know, painting techniques and, you know, just kind of trying to create more atmospheric works that like, I think that's kind of like a very New York aesthetic, you know, a little more contemporary art,
yeah.
You know, but like, you know, like the art thing has always been kind of like, I don't know. It's always been my, like my, you know, my focus, and mm-hmm. the toys are just kind of like things that I like to do to complement the paintings. Like, you know, people who can't afford to buy a painting can always buy the, you know, the toy, and, you know, like everyone's happy.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know. I think that I think those are some that I think I said something similar to that last time we chatted.
Yeah.
I'm quite sure I did. And yeah, so, you know, the calendar is like generally pretty lined up all the way into 2026,
which that's wild.
Just this next year, but yeah. It's been lined, you know. But and that when I come back and finally do another show in Los Angeles, but
yeah,
you know,
when's the? Do you have an LA one planned?
Yep, 2026 in June.
Okay.
You know, so it's going to be a big one.
A close one.
It's going to be at Corey Hulford Gallery, and okay. It's going to be their main space, the big space, which is daunting. Like,
yeah.
It's like, that's like a 33 painting space right there at least.
Yeah.
So, Yeah.
I can't wait to see that in person. I've been waiting for that kind of stuff. What's next for Low Fidelity? I mean, you've had different runs come out, like a Winnie the Pooh theme, so camo.
I had the my original plan was to do just that run of five colorways, and I haven't really put too much thought into like a second production run of like anything. I still have plenty enough stock of, like, you know, the camo. Like, we finally sold out of the Winnie the Pooh, which is, you know, took a lot longer than I thought it was, because I thought, like, I mean, it's fucking Winnie the Pooh colors.
Yeah.
Like, fucking, like, you know, like, how can you not love this? And, you know, people were not as enthusiastic about it as I thought. Maybe it's because it is kind of low-hanging fruit, but,
yeah,
you know. I did consider doing, like, a final one that I would call, like, the Fade to Black one, where it's just, like, you know, black with some gloss hits on the eyes and the nose, and then maybe flock the hoodie so it feels, you know, fuzzy.
Ooh, that's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, like, you know, that would be the conclusion to the series, you know. But it's a lot of money. It's a lot of money, man.
Yeah. I mean, and then going, I think the hard part is, like, you hear about it's a lot of money to do that, and then it's a lot of money. Like, you were at DesignerCon, so you traveled to Vegas, then had to bring stuff with you to sell.
Yep.
Having a booth there is like, it's just money on top of money on top of money.
Right. As a gamble. Obviously, like, I do well enough to make it worth my while.
Yeah.
But I'm like, you know, every time I'm just kind of like, ugh.
Yeah.
All right. Like, you know, got to pay for help, you know, at the booth, got to pay for, like, you know, housing. Though I will say that Las Vegas is more affordable than Orange County.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And, you know, did you make it out to?
Yeah, I did. We did. Yeah.
What'd you think? What'd you think?
You know, being its first, I tried not to, like, I don't want to be disparaging or like, or rude about if I didn't love certain things, because I kept reminding myself this is year one in Vegas. Yes. And I wasn't around for early years of DesignerCon. I didn't start doing this until like 2021. And so going to DesignerCon, I mean, I missed being in Orange County. I love Orange County and I love that area. And then flying to Vegas, I flew in Saturday morning, flew out Saturday night. I was in and out.
Oh, wow. Oh, okay. Wow.
But only like a 40-minute flight. I live in San Diego, so it's like super quick. I thought a couple things. One, it seemed like there was a lot less people there, like customers and stuff. And sure. No matter where I walked, even between like – people that I knew would have people surrounding them, I still didn't see a lot of people.
Right.
Which I don't know what that's about. I was bummed at where it was held, because it was like, it's like an industrial park is what it felt like.
Right. Yeah. It did
like that. And that's harder to, like, Vegas is known for what it is. And so to have something off the strip in this like industrial style area or like convention hall area, that seems hard. I think that Ben is still trying to figure it out. And so I don't know. I hope that answers your question. Like I will be back if that's any consolation.
I felt that, you know, like, yeah, I definitely can see the, like, it didn't, there wasn't a lot of people there. There wasn't as many as like there would be in Southern California.
Right.
I think a lot of people kind of held back because, you know, it's the first year, they wanted to, like, you know, give it some time and some space, and, you know, understandably so. Not sure how ComplexCon, you know, being there also conflicted with the attendance.
Mm-hmm.
I also kind of feel like the way that they laid things out was not conducive, to getting people to really explore the hall.
Mm.
Like, you know, you put like Metacom and fucking, you know, Pop Mart
right at the door.
In the fucking front, right at the door. Like, you know, I mean, like, sure. I'm sure there's some kind of weird contractual thing that they fucking have to do, you know, where it's like, you know, we're going to pay this much money for the fucking booth, and in return, you're going to fucking put us here, you know, kind of thing. But it would have been so much better if they put these monoliths, you know, in areas where people aren't, like, you know, going to, and it forces people to, like, you know, like, line up, you know, and see the other booths, see the other, like, the lesser known, like, you know, artists. Mm-hmm. I don't know, like, the politics of that.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's quite a bit. And I think it's a bummer that, like, so many, like, parts of the convention center were just crickets. And, you know,
did you get to walk around a lot?
I mean, I walked around, but, like,
yeah,
I didn't get a chance to fully explore it, you know, and, I, you know, like, it's hard when you're running your own booth,
yeah,
you know, and you only have one assistant and,
yeah,
you know, they, you know, like, you know, you walk away for a little while and then you get a text message like, hey, we kind of need you here, and, you know, you have to go back to the booth.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember, with the booths on one, and then there was this weird thing in the middle where it was like bigger booths that were there, which right. it went from like normal size to like giant booths to then all the tables. And I get that you have to separate the tables or you got to put them somewhere. I wish that they could find a way to intermix those somehow, because you have so many artists doing tables because it's a lower cost, a lower entry to do this,
yeah.
but they're really good artists. And mm-hmm. if it takes just getting them somehow intermingled where it was like one row booth, one row tables, and it does that, I don't know. I don't know how it would function, but it was very segregated the way it was split up. Like
right.
you had the big things in the middle, right in the front. And then a little bit past that, you had the beginning of booths. And then these like Last Bastion Studios, I can never say enough good things about them. I love them. I love who they are. I love what they stand for. They had a massive booth where it was like four booths almost, where they were just like, different artists were taking out different sections and that's awesome. And they deserve all that. I wish they would have surrounded that with like other booths. Don't just like seclude them or like put them in the middle.
Yeah. It was kind of weird, right? Like the, like when you go in from the main entrance and you hang a right and you go all the way toward to the end, it's just these gigantic monolithic booths.
Yeah.
Like monolithic booths, like huge ones. And you're like, okay, well, you know, here's Kid Robot. Here's, you know,
Super Seven and Mondo, like, and yeah,
these big ass, like, you know, other Chinese, you know, artists that are like coming up. And it's like, okay, cool. But like, you know, now, like, it would have been great if, like, you broke these people up a little bit mm-hmm. so that they, you know, you had like newer people, like, so, you know, like, yeah, more artist alleys, you know, and stuff like yeah. that. But
it could just be the bigger you get, I'm assuming with conventions or whatever, the more you're able to attract bigger things like punk drunkers and whatever. And mm-hmm. which is great. And I think that's huge for them, but then you lose where you started eventually. Sure, and sure. so then there has to be something else that's going to end up being created for them.
Well, they had a, like an entire like Japan section, you know, they had Rock and Jelly Bean there. That was cool. Yeah. They had,
I think Sunguts was there.
Sunguts was there, like, you know, and then like a lot of like, you know, Don, Data Dub Don's, you know, like harem of artists, you know, which includes Punk Drunkards kind of, because like, you know, he's kind of helps them. He helps them out, you know, with things here and there. And, but yeah, I don't know. We'll see how it goes. How it goes.
Do you plan on going back again next year?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
I do. Yeah. I mean, the thing always is like, I love coming and saying hi. I love walking around and saying hi and doing all that. This year was the first year. I think the way to describe it like best is usually I'm hesitant because I don't want to take away time where you could be spending time talking, schmoozing, selling, doing all the stuff. This was the first year I didn't feel like I was taking away time from artists.
Yeah.
That felt weird.
Because it kind of like everything kind of, well, I'm used to it kind of moving in waves, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, suddenly like, you know, like you're, and I'm glad it goes in waves because if it was just a constant barrage, I don't think I could be able to, you know, handle it. Though it would be nice if it was, because it means I'm really making money.
Yeah.
But the attendance was, you know, yeah. I mean, that's obviously like had a big, you know, to do about it, you know. So the fact that it was open enough for you to kind of go and like, you know, talk to friends and colleagues and, you know, artists and whatever. So
yeah,
you know, we'll see how it goes. It reminded me kind of the previous year's Designer Con. The previous year, I think it was the 2023, the last one in Anaheim, where tons of people pulled out because it was the weekend before like Christmas or something like that.
Yeah.
Whereas it, you know, usually it's like a week, you know, before Thanksgiving or something. And like the booths were really spaced, like the hall, the booths were really spaced out. The attendance was, you know, a little spotty. But hey, you know, what can you do? Right.
Yeah. I mean, so. Yeah, I know that they'll figure it out. I know that it's going to keep growing and keep doing what it's going to do.
Right.
And I'm pumped. I'll keep going back and flying that 45 minutes to get there. No problem.
Is there still hype around fucking Bear Bricks?
Okay, that's a good question. In the last 4 years that this podcast has been running, one artist out of, 200 and something episodes has said that they collect Bear Bricks. So I don't know. I don't love the look of them. Like, collect what you're going to collect. I don't care. Everyone can collect. I collect bootleg Ninja Turtles. I'm no one to talk. But
nice.
I think that when I see them, I'm not into the design of a Bear Brick in general.
Right.
And so it doesn't matter if there's a 300% or 1,000% sized one, because I didn't like the tiny one.
Right.
Yeah. But I do like, because everyone got one in their bag when you got like the exclusive one. I think mine's still in the bag somewhere. I don't know what to do with it, because I did, like, I'll give it away or something. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I haven't met anyone around me that absolutely loves them.
Yeah, I mean,
I know Ben does. Like, Ben has them all through 3D Retro, and
I mean, it did something that I think was kind of interesting for platform toys.
Yeah,
and that is that it, like, you know, Dunny kind of went off the deep end with modifications and everything like that, and it was great for that. Like, you know, I enjoyed like seeing just how insane some of these, you know, Dunnies came out, became. But what it ended up doing was it ended up compromising the original shape, you know, like where, like, now if you get a plain one, you're just like, oh, it's a plain one.
Yeah.
You know, I want the one with like the freaking, like, you know, like wisps of plastic smoke and skulls all over it. Fucking one. And, you know, no,
yeah.
Yeah, that this is not it. But the thing, but the Bear Brick did not allow artists to break away from its original shape.
Yeah.
And so when you like line them up, when you have, you know, $20,000 worth of fucking, you know, Bear Brick, and you put them together, it looks very impressive.
Yeah. Cool. The big ones, I've seen a picture where someone had like, I don't know, like 20 or 30 big ones. That's cool. Like, you're rebuilding an army. I wish it was anything else. Anything else. I just am not into it. So, there's another one that's coming, or that has come back, that I, Trexie.
Oh, the Trexie. Right.
If I didn't like Bear Brick for how it looked, I really don't like Trexie.
Which one was a Trexie?
It's got like the round. So they have a couple different designs, and it's the same kind of situation where they're either blind box or whatever. And an artist.
Who produces the Trexie?
Ooh, I don't know. It came back under the name Trexie, so I don't know. Let me look it up real quick.
Oh, is it the one with the I'm looking it up right now, because like I know the name, but it's Trexie, right?
I.
Yeah. Oh, God.
These things.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's just, it reminds me of, like, there are just figures that I just don't find. I know that there are people that find them great. I am not that market, it's whatever, but.
No, I remember when these things came out, I did a custom one, and, you know, Yeah, not a fan.
They ran a thing when they first came out where it said, like, we are looking for artists that we want to produce your stuff. And so I was like, what does that mean? And they said, oh, for like this amount of money, we'll put your stuff on Atrexi. That is not what was said. That's crazy. Yeah, I don't love, I just don't have, they remind me of Funko Pops a little bit, which is weird. Like, I just don't like that aesthetic in general.
It's the proportions, it's just not, yeah, it's just not cute. It's not cute. Yeah. It's not cool. Like,
yeah,
you know, fucking, like, yeah, not a fan. I wasn't a fan of the fucking the super plastic platform either.
Mm.
What was that one called?
The
I'm not even really like I'm just not a platform toy person anymore. But like,
yeah,
you know, well, super plastic.
Why can't we remember the name? I saw one at
Janky.
There we go.
The Janky.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I hated the feet.
Yeah.
The feet, like, you know, they put them in fucking, like, shoes. And I'm just like, what the fuck is this?
Like, I think there's something about those style of toys, which I think Blind Box has its place. I have a volunteer I work with that loves, you know what a Smeesky is?
No, I think
they're so great. Like, they're all the same.
Yeah. Those guys are great. Those guys are fucking awesome. I have one. I have one on my shelf. It's I think it's like, you know, like hunched over, like taking a shit or something like that. Yeah.
So she loves them. So whenever I see them, I'll pick them up and whatever. And those types of blind boxes seem fun, but because for some reason they just are enticing, even though they're really simplistic.
Mm. Yeah. There's, you know, something... my favorite platform is
what?
My favorite platform is the Key. Q-E-E. Okay. It was created by Toy2R and they were really big in the aughts. And is it Q-E-E? Let me check. Q-E-E. I think it, yeah.
Oh.
Q-E-E. Yeah. I thought that was one of the best design platforms of them all. And they had a cat version with triangular ears and they had the bear version with the round ears.
Yeah. I mean, you have a predisposition towards bears or something, huh?
Maybe. Maybe. But like, it's I thought that the design looked, you know, was very approachable.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, brilliant in its symmetry and there are so many artists that fucking did these things. So many fucking artists did them. Like, mm-hmm. I somewhere in my fucking, like, I think in my mom's place, I have the Shepherd Fairy one and they like just printed the Obey face on it and is, you know, the red block Obey on it. And I was like, oh, this is perfect. And I don't know what happened. I heard like the guy who ran the company was kind of an asshole and you know, just kind of ran the company into the ground, but
yeah,
I mean, these things happened.
I mean, so we've talked about the gallery and our love and hate for toys and all kinds of stuff, and you have like you're planned out for 2026 all the way through 2026. What is the next like four things that you are getting ready for that people like will be able to see or any other products like that kind of stuff?
Definitely looking at more resin stuff.
Okay.
With like, you know,
like bigger stuff.
No, just smaller limited run things. Yeah. Like for DesignerCon this year, I got caught up in on TikTok, I think, and then on YouTube. I got caught up on like the Fuck Booms series featuring the Skibidi toilet.
Yeah.
And So as an homage, I made like a limited to 20 pieces.
Yes, you did.
Skibbity toilet. Yeah. Bear. And like I was thinking, you know, like would it hurt to like just produce another small run of these? You know, just
yeah,
like, just 20 of another 20. This time it'll be a black bear, you know, or I could do a like a clear cast resin that in yellow.
Yeah.
You know, bear, you know, so like when it does yellow. Like it'll
just gonna get better. Yeah.
Like, so, you know, I've been thinking about that. And then I was thinking, you know, like people really responded to the Haribo inspired like lo-fi minis that I did. Yeah. I did them in the Haribo gummy bear colors.
Yeah. The little bags of them, right?
Yeah, little bags of them. And I was thinking, you know, it'd be fun is because for the minis, I actually changed the proportion. We changed the proportions.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little bit wider than the normal figure. And I was like, you know, it'd be fun is if we made a 5-inch version.
Yeah.
And like, you know, like just do like 20 of each color, clear, yellow, orange, red, green. And, you know, just do some like resin cast things just to kind of like, you know, see how the year goes. And because, you know, like we were talking about in the beginning, like the economic uncertainty right now is, you know, like making me very apprehensive of taking, you know, big risks.
Yeah. As I'm about to produce a toy. Thanks for saying that, Luke. That's crazy. I mean, you're bringing up something that, you know, I was going to, we could end, but I want to talk about one thing before we end this. Like something that I think the toy scene as a whole, we have to come to grips with something. So when we sell toys at a certain price point, I get it. I get that we're trying to make money. I get that we're trying to earn back the time, the blood, the sweat, the tears. I get that.
Mm-hmm.
We can't sell a Ninja Turtle figure for $295 anymore. I understand what that means.
Yeah.
But when the economy cannot support the cost of what you're doing, do we lower the price or do we stop making? Why are I've seen people produce things and I've just been like, I'm in a cool spot where I get to support artists and it's a secondary thing. And this podcast is secondary to who I am. Mm-hmm. And I just am, I'm lucky in that. It was just a cool opportunity. So not everyone's like that. And so when people go to DesignerCon and we see these action figures that, like Super 7's got it $20 for these factory whatever. And then we go to this artist alley and it's like $120 for a figure. What are we going to like? Can the collector base even support that anymore?
Well, if an artist is spending, is charging $120 for a figure, you know, and they're, and people are buying it, you know, that's one thing. You know, if they are producing it and they're spending $125 worth of time and resources, you know, but it just sits there, that's a completely different situation.
Yeah.
And sometimes you gotta just, you know, like, you know, eat it in order to develop, to grow support and interest and stuff like that. And, you know, or you need to go back to the start and try something else, you know, that, you know, does connect with a collector base.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I kind of feel like, you know, like it's like, you know, my own personal art career, right? When I started, you know, painting, I was doing paintings like this sized for freaking like, you know, hundreds of dollars, you know, and just over time, you know, grew my market, grew the market, and fucking got the, you know, grew my fan base, and then, you know, got to a place where I can actually start making a living doing it.
Yeah.
And like, I kind of feel like, you know, if you're like, you know, producing $125, like hearing like $125 for a toy, it just makes me fucking like wince a little bit for myself. I can't imagine fucking like, unless it's like something big, something freaking like heavy, something solid, and something that like I feel like is more than just a figure or a toy or a tchotchke or something that I could just fucking set, you know, on my desk, you know, something that I display, like, you know, with pride.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you know, like that kind of money is just like, you know, like, I don't know, like you got to think about it from, you know, from the collector perspective. You know, I'm both a collector and a producer. So, you know, my fucking apartment is surrounded by fucking like unopened boxes and, you know, whatever, which means, you know, I feel it from the perspective of a person throwing money out, and I feel from the perspective as a person who's on this other side, fucking producing and trying to, like, you know, grow interest.
Yeah.
And I think that it's, you know, it's tough, you know, like, you know, especially now, like everything is, you know, so fucking expensive, you know, like the cost of living has just has changed, you know, buying, you don't go to McDonald's with $5 in your pocket, you know, thinking you're going to be fed, you know, anymore. You have to go into a McDonald's with at least 10, which is, you know, just, well, I mean, it is the 7th, right? Or is it the 8th?
It is the 7th today.
Well, the $5 McDonald's bargain menu has just started today.
Yeah. That's for everyone listening.
Yes.
I got it, like, full disclosure, it comes because I produced a figure called the Furbzerker through Bottleneck.
Oh, that's great. Nice.
It's a fun, like, yeah, little piece. Dove was like, I produced a smaller version of it with Dove at DKE, and then he put me in contact with someone to like get this done. And it was in the same style of like, they'll pay for it, minimal risk. It was awesome.
Right.
And these sold for $100.
Yeah, that's like a $100 piece.
Right. In order to make anything back on the small ones, I priced those at $100 as well. Fully packaged, articulated, and it came with accessory, all kinds of stuff. And the whole time, and even now, I'm constantly like, what the hell was I thinking? Like, what am I like, they sat with Dove and he sold a couple, but they're still there. Mm-hmm. And it's just a thing of like, what was I trying to do with that?
Mm.
And I can't go back. I wish I could go back and redo that. But it was just such a weird moment. Like, and I still don't know what I was doing. That's where this all started.
Did you learn something from it?
Yeah, don't do that again. I did learn. Yeah. I think, like, I learned.
And you know what? Like, look, at the end of the day, like, that is a small price to pay for a lesson you learned in production and, sales and everything like that. And, you know, like, money comes and goes,
Yeah.
You know, so like, you know, you can't like be too hung up on that. You know, like I've had, like, you know, I look at all the unsold paintings I've created in my life, and all I see, and you know, and all I see are like fucking, you know, lessons to be learned. And, you know, and as long as you learn something from it, then it was worth the time, the energy, and the money.
Yeah. And that's a good way to look at it. And I feel like I learned that I need to chill. That's what I learned.
It's a lot harder than it's a lot harder to follow through on chilling, but like, yeah. You know, but at the end of the day, like, hey, you know, like, if you're going to just continue beating yourself up over it, then fucking, you know, you're just fucking like running around, you know, in circles.
Yeah.
That's not fun. You know, right. Like you take what you learn and you press forward.
Yeah.
You know, with the next project, you know, and you go like, you know, maybe I shouldn't like, you know, charge that much money despite all the extra stuff and like, you know, the accessories and whatever. Like, yeah. You know, just stick with, you know, the, you know, as long as the like, you know, the what's it called again? The
Furbzerker
needs not tools of destruction. The Furbzerker Furbs.
Yeah. Is the tool of destruction.
Yes, it is. There it is. Thank you. Thank
yeah. You. Luke. It has been, as always, a pleasure having you come back on the podcast.
The pleasure was mine. Thank you for having me. Sorry, I went off on all like weird rants and whatever.
There's
a lot going on in this world.
Yeah, it's going to be hard to write the bio on this episode, but I'm really excited for it.
I spent the past hour and a half just bullshitting with Luke Chu. Luke Chu. You want to hear Luke Chu just spew fucking crap out of his spew crap, this is the episode.
Tune in. Yeah. The last part is plug the stuff, the toys, the place they can go to find you, all that stuff before you go.
You can find me on social media at like Luke Chu, LukeCHueh. You go to my store. That's lukechustore.com. That's LukeCHueh.com. Where you can be able to get the Low Fidelity figures. There's only two designs in stock. The camo one, which I love. I don't know why it's not more popular. And the original one, which I love just as much because it's the original. And you know, I'll be having some prints coming out later on this month, maybe in a week or two. And please give me a follow if you like what you see.